So 0289 033 105 is our number. 0289 033 105. This is a tweet from the Ulster Unionist Doug Beattie on the back of the Spotlight programme last night. And it says, the Chief Constable of the PSNI must act on this evidence that adds weight in the clear accusations that Gerry Adams was responsible for directing terrorism, and hashtag justice. So I want to speak to Doug Beattie about that, and also to Barney Rowan, who's going to speak to us on the programme this morning as well. Doug Beattie, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
So you're calling on the Chief Constable to take action on the back of a former Provo who seems to revel in being a former Provo and has an absolute hatred of Gerry Adams.
No, absolutely not. This is just yet another person, another individual from a long list of former self-confessed terrorists who said that Gerry Adams was one of their colleagues in a terrorist organisation. And not only that, but that he was a high-ranking member of that organisation. And if you add that to the fact that we also have military intelligence who are saying exactly the same thing, we have documentation to say that high-ranking IRA meetings with the government included Gerry Adams, then you suddenly have a picture of a man who was involved at the highest levels. You know, we're talking about an IRA chief of staff, Sean McStirfan, who also said that Gerry Adams was in the IRA. And if he was in the IRA, and if he was a high member of the IRA in the Army Council, then he was responsible for directing terrorism. Now, if you have that argument that we should stick by the rule of law, then that evidence is enough for an investigation. And that's what I'm saying the police should do. They should investigate. Now, the police will decide because it's their investigatory body, and they will put a file before the PPS, and the PPS will decide whether there's anything to answer. But what I'm saying is there is enough evidence there for an investigation.
But would part of that investigation include the arresting of Gerry Adams, the questioning of Gerry Adams, the taking him to a barracks?
Well, that's not up to me to decide. That's an operational decision for the PSNI. And how they go about investigations is up to the PSNI, how they go about investigations. So I'm not saying or directing which way they should take action. All I'm saying is that I'm seeing mounting evidence from various different quarters, which says that Gerry Adams was a member of the IRA and a high-ranking member, and therefore I believe he was responsible for directing terrorism, and therefore the police must carry out an investigation if we are to believe in the rule of law.
Yes, but you're not going to get Sean McStafoyne up in a court because he's long dead. You've Mr. Long down in Limerick, who just seems to be absolutely proud of everything he did during his involvement in the Provost, and you have military intelligence that may or may not be able to be presented as some form of evidence. If you carry out an investigation into Gerry Adams and eventually the outcome is he's arrested by the guards and extradited to Northern Ireland, what would that do for the ongoing peace process?
We cannot be held hostage by a peace process. We either believe in the rule of law or we do not, Frank. Now, I am not saying that the evidence is there or that evidence will stand up in court. That's not my job. That's not my job to decide that. The police do the investigation. They put a file to the PPS, and the PPS decide if the evidence is strong enough for there to be any more further action. That is not my job. They are independent. That's their job to do that. But if we are saying that with the rule of law, that with the evidence that is quite clear now, that's coming out from various different quarters, all I'm saying is that should lead to an investigation against Gerry Adams for directing terrorism. That's what I'm saying. I think that should be the case. And that should be the case for anybody who's found responsible for any acts of any unlawful act. And it shouldn't be caveated by, but what about the peace process?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you're asking the PSNI to do the impossible. That's the reason that I'm asking the question.
Well, you could be arguing that they're asking them to do the impossible. I mean, we're seeing this on a daily basis, where people are asking for the police to investigate crimes, some as long as 50 years ago. And you could argue the case that they're asked to do the impossible there. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't look into it. Doesn't mean that they should not investigate it. And I've seen the list that's being investigated by the Legacy Investigations Branch. And some of those are 40- and 50-year-old crimes. But I'm not saying that they should not investigate them. And then all I'm saying is, in this case here, with the mounting evidence, then this should be investigated also. You know, we can't have a rule for one and a rule for other. You know, he cannot be a protected species if he has broke the law. And directing terrorism is a serious offence. You know, and for too long now, what we have seen is those people at the very bottom end of the rung here, those people who were sent out to bomb, those young soldiers who were put on the street, all suffering the consequences of their actions. But those people at the very top of the tree, those people who directed it, seems to be getting away without having to answer for what they did. And I think that's wrong. And I think Gerry Adams should be answering for what he did.
Do you get a sense that there was regret last night towards the end in the emotion shown by a former provo who broke down and cried and asked what was it all about, the waste of all that life? He seemed quite hardcore the whole way through, but then towards the end he just broke down and he cried. He cried like a little boy at the end of the end of the program.
I mean, it was a difficult program to watch, Frank. I've watched the two of them now, and they were both very difficult to watch. You know, I watched it as a member of the British Army who served in Northern Ireland, and it was difficult to see what went on and the opportunities that were missed where we could have had peace, and that's really regrettable. You know, the people who were involved will have regrets for what they did, and there was real compassion and there was real regret, and I think it was forthright regret. And you cannot be but moved by those people who absolutely regret their actions and who can stand up and say, you know, what was it all about? Why did we do this? Why did so many people have to die? So absolutely moved by those people who have the power to do that. But while they're doing that, those people who sent them out, those people who directed them, are standing tall and not taking ownership of the responsibility for what they set out others to do.
There are a variety of reactions from people coming across in the series. The one I'm referring to there is a former provo called Tommy Gorman, and he did.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
He broke down in tears at the end. Where you have, I think it's Des Long, certainly a gentleman called Long, who contributes a considerable amount to the program, and who certainly says that Gerry Adams was very senior on the Army Council, and he said, "I'm saying this at the risk of being shot." He without doubt comes across as someone who revels in having recruited young people into the provos. You see him displaying weaponry, you see him encouraging youngsters to be part of the IRA. He seems to have almost a sickening sense of pride in what happened. When you see all the bombs going off around what he's saying, you see all the death and destruction, he doesn't seem to be aware of it at all.
No, absolutely, and maybe it's because he's in front of a camera, and maybe it's a bit of bravado, but he showed absolutely no remorse for all of those people who lost their lives, those who were injured, both mentally and physically. And again, that is extremely sad to see. I mean, I guess there are people out there who can look at past actions and show compassion and realise when things were either wrong or they wish they had not been involved in that. And there are other people who will be proud of every single thing that they did, regardless of the consequences. We will get that in society regardless. And Desmond Long was the absolute opposite to the previous man that we spoke about. But it did not surprise me. But what is quite clear is he is very open and he's very honest about the part that he played, while others are not. And those who are not, but they did, are just as bad as he are, because they are not owning up to what they did.
And just a couple of other things. That amazing man at the end, the reverend, the minister, who had gone to County Clare to try and talk to the provost, and he was threatened by the UDA, he had to up sticks and leave and go to Canada. It would have broken your heart watching him at the very end of the Spotlight programme read a letter that he had written many, many years ago. He is a commentary on the suffering that people on the fringes went through.
Absolutely, and I would say a brave man, a man who wanted to stop the killing, stop the violence, who wanted people to come together, to talk, to stop the senseless murders. And he showed real courage, and he showed, again, real compassion. And for that, he was forced out by loyalist paramilitaries. And that's extremely sad. And I would like to think that those same loyalist paramilitaries today, if they are still around, can bring themselves to reflect on what they did to this man. And maybe they could write a letter to him to to reflect on those times past. But they were times past. We aren't there anymore. It was a pretty horrific and horrendous time. And I said at the start of this, Frank, that we missed so many opportunities where we could have had peace. Sometimes the British government were at fault. Sometimes the IRA were at fault. Sometimes individual actors were playing into the narrative and they were at fault. You know, so we missed those opportunities. And because we missed those opportunities, thousands more were to die or be injured. And that is what I have taken away from that program from last night, which really, really saddened me in many ways.
Yeah, three examples of where they were on the threshold of peace and for some reason they couldn't close the deal. One other program that was on last night was Frontline, a new series on UTV that interviews people who worked on the front line, who were involved in delivering a service of any sort during the Troubles, and the archive footage that they were able to show, plus the archive footage from the BBC, the bombs going off, the weaponry, the destruction, the despair. Both programmes are a stark reminder that it's essential we never go back to that, Doug Biddy.
Oh, Frankie, I mean, such a true word you've just said there. We can never go back to that. I recently was with a A&E nurse from the Troubles who gave her testimony, and it was absolutely horrific. Sometimes we talk about the actions of the armed forces or the police and what we suffered, and we kind of forget about some of the other services. Certainly our hospital staff, our ambulance workers and our firefighters, and what they had to go through during the Troubles. But I listened to the lady from A&E during the Troubles giving her testimony, and it was truly shocking and it was truly moving. And it made me reflect that sometimes I get a little tied up in my past and my past as a soldier and what I was involved in. And I just forget that this reached every single corner of our society. Everybody was affected, and everybody, I think, is still affected in some way. And even, you know, passing it on to sons and daughters and cousins and nieces and nephews. So you're absolutely right. We could never go back to that, because, you know, could we ever go through those stories again? You know, we just could not. But it's important that we don't forget.
Doug Biddy, thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. Your opinions are welcome on what Doug Biddy has said to us. We'll speak to Brian Rowan, who's always kept a watchful eye on the Troubles the whole way through, and he's been reporting on it and being a commentator on every political development since. Brian, what the BBC are doing in that programme, the Spotlight series, which is running over a number of weeks, and indeed what the Frontline team are doing with UTV on UTV at this present moment, it's an incredible commentary on the last 50 years, both of those programmes.
Grim reminders, Frank, indeed. Now, just to go back to what we're talking about this morning, how many of us are going to fall off our stool in shock because of another interview that says Gerry Adams was in the IRA? I think the Gerry Adams question is just one of a million questions when it comes to our past. In this case, I accept entirely it's a big question, because he was a big figure in the conflict period and in the transition towards peace. But if we want an answer to that question and the many other questions, then we need to think beyond politics to a process that might work, not in terms of absolute truth. I don't think that's achievable from any side, never mind all of the sides, but a process that provides more information and explanation and understanding and context of those conflict years. We also need to work out who does this and why we're doing it. I think the most important commentary in that Spotlight film last night came from the Republican, Tommy Gorman, his summarising through tears of the conflict years and the words, a waste of time and a waste of life. It was a reminder to us all that we can't bring back the dead, and that the priority of any legacy process should be that conflict and that past should never happen again, that it should never be repeated. And I think that's why we need to remove politicians and politics from the shaping of a legacy process. The Stormont House Agreement will not work. And I think we're way beyond the point now where we need someone in here, not of us, with no emotional attachment to that conflict period, who begins to shape that process that might at some point deliver, if not absolute truth, then the maximum amount of information and disclosure from all of the sides.
But you have to get as much truth as you possibly can. And Doug Beattie's calling on the police to investigate Gerry Adams. That's you're saying no one's going to fall off their stool when they hear that he was in the Provost, but he still denies it. And he was accused last night of basically directing terrorism. Can we get to the truth if we don't insist on the police investigating the likes of Gerry Adams?
Well, I spoke yesterday on radio about an interview I did with the former Chief Constable Hugh Ansley in June 1996 as he was about to leave here. The IRA ceasefire had broken down in February 96, and by the summer of that year, there was a bit of speculation that a ceasefire might be restored. It wasn't in the summer of 96. But this is what Hugh Ansley said about the IRA leadership at that time. And I'll just read you these few words, Frank, because it'll help with this conversation. He said, "There is no doubt in my mind that at the top of the Republican movement, the Provisional IRA and Sinn Féin are inextricably linked." And he went on to say, "So I do not see this artificial distinction that's been drawn. I believe Messrs. Adams and McGuinness are very, very influential people. And I think they have a major say in the conduct overall of the Republican thrust." And Hugh Ansley then said, "There are, of course, other members on the Provisional Army Council." So in that interview in June 1996, Hugh Ansley was placing Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams inside the IRA Army Council and at the top of the Republican leadership. And that's what I mean about none of us will fall off our stool in shock by another interview that says Gerry Adams was in the IRA. Why is he still denying it, Frank? Because we don't have the process that allows people to come forward, to be frank, to be honest, to provide more of the answers and more of the information that people are looking for. Now, we don't know. We don't know what truth is going to look like. And that's why I think we need someone in to speak to all of the sides across state, security, intelligence, military, Republican and Loyalist, to work out the process that will deliver that maximum amount of information and to tell people what truth will be and what it won't be. And I've said to you before, I used a line a couple of years ago, that it was time to stop lying about the truth. And what I meant by that comment was it was time we were more honest with people about what a truth process or an information process might deliver and what it won't deliver. But if we go down the road of trying to get an information process while on a parallel track we have investigations, then people are not going to come forward, Frank, to provide the information that many families and many people out there are looking for. I think we need an information process. We need to do all we can by way of practical help in terms of helping those who were hurt the most by the conflict years. And instead of talking about an archive of information, we need some proper remembrance and memorial that puts everyone's story into some place that remembers the conflict years. Because I agree entirely with Doug Beattie. No one is saying that we should forget. But it's how we achieve the best process that remembers everyone. Because when we talk about the conflict years, many of us will recall the headlines. We remember the people we remember those big headlines like Oman and Askillen and Shankill and Lochgall and Lochan Island, but we forget so much underneath those headlines. How do we remember properly the people who died on their own, the people who were injured, and how then do we begin to think about how we move forward? Because if we don't do something about this, Frank, then those of us of the conflict years are going to bury ourselves and the generation that are following us in that conflict period, because the trenches of the past are being dug deeper, and I think there are people in politics who simply want to recast the conflict period on another stage to play a game of winners and losers, and there are no winners in that, Frank.
However, going hand in hand with your commentary is an umbrella, and under that umbrella, amnesty for all.
And I have said to you 100 times, Frank, and to others 100 times, I think we need an amnesty. It's a poisonous word. But you cannot have a peace process that releases prisoners and then create a past process that potentially creates prisoners. this conflict is either over or it's not over. And if it is over, then we need to find the proper process and the proper people to shape and design something that will provide the maximum amount of information. The other problem we have at the moment, Frank, is we're trying to do all of this in a period of political turmoil. So how do you find the right person in the right atmosphere that begins to create that right process that provides eventually the maximum amount of information and disclosure? We need an amnesty. We may well get to that point, but if we leave it to politicians, if we leave it to us, then we're not going to get there, Frank, because we're all far too close to this. We're all emotionally attached to it. We're such a small place. This happened around the corner from us. It happened in the next street, in the next town. We all know someone who was either killed or injured. So we've all got that closeness to what happened. And that's why I think we need someone from outside of us with no emotional attachment to this place who can look at it from that perspective and work out what is the best process that will deliver that maximum amount of information.
Okay. Brian, thank you very much indeed. The thoughts of Barney Rowan there. Do you agree or disagree? You're always welcome to contribute to the programme.